lot of people are feeling anxious and a bit stressed, maybe even fearful. Nobody ever chooses hard seasons.
Can't wait to go to work. Can't wait till we gather again. When do we get to eat at Waffle Shop and go to a stinking Penn State football game? I just want to go to church and send my kids back to school.
Habakkuk said, Lord, please tell me what you're doing. And God said, no, I'm not going to tell you, Habakkuk, because if I told you what I was doing, you wouldn't believe it. If God today told us what he's doing in the world, we wouldn't believe it.
God has placed the world into a time of transition. And
what if this is an opportunity like we haven't had maybe in decades, maybe forever?
Hey everyone, don't adjust your screens. Obviously, I'm not Dan Nold. I'm Bill Ewing. I'm the gathering pastor at Calvary Tyrone. Dan and Lynn are in Minnesota. They welcome their newest granddaughter, Maisie Louise, and they're spending some time with family. What a blessing that is. I just wanted to talk to you about a theme that Dan has talked about in recent weeks, and that is this time of transition, this time of leaving our boat, our safety and security, and searching for God's will for our lives. And I really believe this is a time of not only personal, but corporate transition and transformation. It's something that God commands us. In Romans 12, 2, it says, do not be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So that way you can approve, test and approve of what God's will is for your life. God's good, perfect, and pleasing will for your life. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that from here in my backyard. We're in a little community of Northwood, just outside of Tyrone, right next to a fire pit that is very symbolic for me. God continues to not only do some transformational work in me in regards to how I love my neighbors and how I love him. And Ephesians 5:1-2 reminds me that I should be an imitator of Christ. I'm going to read it from the Message because I think it brings it home. As a dad of three kids, it talks to me about how I can model loving my neighbors and loving God for my family and bringing them alongside me. So I'm going to read it right from the Message. It says this: watch what God does, and then you do it. Like children who learn proper behavior from their parents, mostly what God does is love you. Keep company with him and learn a life of love. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious, but extravagant. That part is very important. His love was not cautious, but extravagant. He didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give everything of himself to us. We are to love like that. You see, I believe this is a crucible moment where our response to Jesus' command to follow him is being tested through the fire and our obedience is being refined. You know, perhaps you can relate. You're during this whole coronavirus pandemic, I've had an experience somewhat like Peter's experience. If you were to ask me if my commitment, my faithfulness to Christ, where that lied, I would very boldly say I'm 100% all in. And yet, there are times where, just like Peter, when he stepped out onto the water, found himself drowning. I found myself drowning in the excuses of why I wasn't loving my neighbors to the point of how I believe God was calling me to. The excuses of, well, my busy schedule, or I had to spend time. And although some of these excuses are definitely good, but they weren't profitable. Excuses like spending time with my family, or my neighborhood isn't necessarily open, it's kind of isolated, or, you know, it's just, there's not enough time in the day. I found myself drowning in those excuses. And I found myself, much like Peter, kind of experiencing that weeping, the fact that I was denying what God was commanding me to do. And then my next step, I found here, just like Peter, where I am sitting out on the boat after Christ's death and his resurrection, and I'm fishing, I'm doing what's comfortable to me, and I haven't gotten anything all night, and there's Jesus on the shore, the resurrected Christ, saying, cast the net on the other side of the boat. And the haul was so big that I couldn't bring it in. And when I make my way to the shore, just like Peter did when he jumped out of that boat, He puts on his outer garment. He jumps out of the boat into the water, and he recognizes Christ. John's with him, a couple of other disciples. And they're walking towards the shore, and they have Christ has a fire for them to eat breakfast. You see, I believe, just like Peter, that there's a time where we have that conversation that Jesus had with him. Jesus is sitting there, he's asking him, he's saying, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, well, you know I love you. And this happens three times. And Jesus commands him, well, then tend or feed my sheep. I think this is a time where Jesus is saying, at least he said to me, he says, you know, Bill, do you love me? If you love me, then do like in John chapter 14, verse 15, where it says, if you love me, then obey my commands. And I tend to simplify things, right? And I believe Jesus simplified things too when he said, what are the two greatest commands? And that is to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, everything you are, and then to love your neighbor as yourself. And so when Jesus asked me again, he says, Bill, do you love me? And I said, absolutely, Jesus, you know that I love you. I want my life to be a testimony to you. Nothing about me, but a testimony to you. And he says, well, then love your neighbor as yourself. No excuses. And then he says to me again, well, do you love me? And I say, yeah, you know I love you. And he says, well, then love God with everything you are, all of your being. Fix your eyes on me. Don't worry about the repercussions. Don't worry about maybe what perception is of what your neighbors might think or what other people may think of you when you love extravagantly like I do. So I came to this point where I really didn't know what to do. I didn't want to have any excuses anymore that I'm an introvert or, you know, I don't really like to be outside and amongst nature per se. But I wanted to be obedient. So I said, I just got to a place where I wanted to be still. I prayed. I said, God, you show me then. You show me what is my next step, whatever that may be. What is my next step? And what he revealed to me was not something grandiose. It was a small step. You see, he helped me to see kind of what the first step was and what was missing from our neighborhood. There really was no kind of connection. There was no communication. So we took the step of creating a community Facebook page just to have some communication. We knew a lot of people from our neighborhood, from other things within town. And so we did that. And what a blessing that has been. Not only have we heard it from our neighbors, but we had a neighbor who lost his house and his car in a fire. And the response was awesome. And it was because of that communication. People's hearts were there. They were ready to be pouring out and loving their neighbors. There just wasn't any communication. Things like bringing my kids alongside to take water to the local fire departments. Just little things that God has shown me that I've been able to take that next step. And I think that is really what we're asked to do. It's not necessarily that we're at a point where we're saying, well, no, we don't want to follow Jesus. Maybe we don't know what our next step is. And I think that's the challenge for all of us. I think that's a challenge maybe that God is putting on your heart. It's the in your be still space as you're quieting your heart, even amidst everything that's going on in our world, from corona to these protests of issues of racial injustice. It's what's your next step to loving your neighbor? What's your next step to following these two very basic commands? And it's not in our power, it's not in our strength that we do these things, but it's in Christ. It's understanding that his sacrifice leads the way. His extravagant love leads the way. So Vince is going to talk to you about next, about discovering God's will for your life. And I think in that time where you have these times to pause, if you could just quiet your heart and pray and ask God to reveal to you, what is your next step? Here's the thing, just like the British missionary Hudson Taylor said, he said, God is always advancing. We are to always be moving forward. Right? In John chapter 21, verse 15 is where you'll find that story of Peter of advancing forward, moving from his time of denial to his time of saying, yes, God, I love you, and I'm ready to go on mission. I'm ready to be the person you've called me to be. He says, God is always advancing, and we are at fault if we do not follow him. So be still. Ask God to reveal to you your next step of loving your neighbors. And then go with reckless abandon in doing that. Here's Vince.
Thanks, Bill. You know, God has a purpose and a plan for your life. He put you in your neighborhood for a purpose, but you aren't going to be able to fulfill his plan for your life on your own. Your destiny becomes reality when you partner with God. You won't be able to do that on your own. We have a 2030 vision here at Calvary that Dan continues to share, that we want to see the number of Christ followers double by the year 2030 and to see an epic release of leaders. Many of us here at Calvary have committed to partnering with God on this mission, which we believe is his mission, that all would be saved, working in his field. The story is told of a farmer who was standing alongside his field. He was looking at his abundant harvest. It was beautiful, even rows of vegetables. And then a neighbor drove by and he commented. He said, "Just look at what God has done." The farmer replied, "Yes, but surely you remember what it looked like when God had it all alone." See, our God-given personal and corporate visions will become reality when we partner with God, and we can't partner with God if we don't make time to be still and know that he is God and to hear from him. Dan challenged us 2 weekends ago to find a be still place every day for 45 days. How's that going for you? Have you done it for one day yet? See, God has a plan for your life, and I don't want you to miss it or to have any regrets when you enter the next season and look back on this one. I was reflecting this week, and I remember back to December 6th, 2018, when I was sitting at the Cheesecake Factory in Baltimore, Maryland, and my wife was beside me, and my daughter Katie was sitting across the table from me. And I remember that evening well as I looked at her, knowing that about 12 hours later, she was going to enter what was going to be about a 16-hour surgery. As I looked at her, I realized that she may never look the same, because the doctor's words 6 months before that, as we sat in his office, said that we're going to move her facial nerve and her face will probably slide and it'll be lopsided. There's a good chance we're going to have to remove her carotid artery, which will lose the function of some of her body parts. There's a good chance we're going to have to do a whole bunch of other things, and he listed things like stroke and death. And as we sat and looked at my baby girl, I thought, this may be the last that I see her looking as she does tonight. See, our journey with her, though, had started more than 7 years before that night. She was a freshman at Penns Valley High School and was running cross country. And throughout the year, her times began to get slower and slower. And as a good dad, I just said, "Come on, you got to suck it up and push through the pain." And she did, and she tried, but her times kept getting slower and slower. It was a couple months after the season ended where she walked to the basement one day when we were sitting on the couch, and she said, "Hey, Dad, look, my one arm's about 3 inches longer than the other, and her clavicle bone was sticking out." It was that that set us into a process of CT scans and MRIs to discover what was wrong before they found a golf ball-sized tumor growing inside of her head. That tumor had grown large enough that it killed the nerve that controlled her vocal cord. And her times were getting slower as she ran because she couldn't breathe, because her airways wouldn't close like a normal person's would. Her running was an indication, unbeknownst to us, that something was going on inside of her head. And after an 18-hour surgery in 2012, she lost her left eardrum. And then for the next 7 years following that 2012 surgery, we would go to Johns Hopkins in Baltimore every 6 months for another MRI. And it was in the summer of 2018 when we went back and the doctor looked at one of those MRIs and said, "The tumor's growing again and we're going to have to go back in for another surgery." In those moments, time stands still as he began to read the list of things that could possibly happen to Katie during that surgery. And when Katie and I got back into the vehicle to drive home that day, the first song that came on our stereo was one of our favorites. It's called "Live Like You Were Dying." a guy has asked the question in the song, what did you do when you learned the news that you were dying? And he responds by saying, I went skydiving, I went Rocky Mountain climbing, I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu, and I loved deeper, and I gave forgiveness that I'd been denying. That song hit us like a ton of bricks that day. And it just so happened that we had already planned a trip for a month later to go to Wyoming and Montana, where we together were going to climb the Rocky Mountains, and we were going to go skydiving, and we were going to go to the Cheyenne Frontier Rodeo, the granddaddy of them all. She didn't ride a bull then, but we sure did watch a lot of bull riding. Why am I telling you all this? Because this stuff that Dan has been challenging us to do, to pray first, to love always, and to invite often, should have a sense of urgency to it. And when we get that kind of news, we plan things that we want to make sure we do in one's lifetime. Because our days are numbered, we didn't know what the results of Katie's surgery would be. But the reality is, for all of us, our days are numbered. The Bible is clear on that from beginning to end. So the best time for us to act on the whispers of the Holy Spirit is now. If you haven't made time to be still, as Dan has challenged us to do, to hear the voice of God, the best time to do that is now, not in the next season. You won't get clear instructions from him until you slow down to listen to him. And when you start to number your days, you start to live with some extreme focus on the things that really matter. You don't really care what people think when you're in a dying season. The fears of awkward front yard mission moments are overcome by an urgency that this is your time and this is your moment, and you're a steward of the time and the relationship that God has put you in. Ephesians chapter 5, 15 to 17 says, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. I just want to read that verse again. He says, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. Do you know what the Lord's will is for your life? The challenge here in Ephesians is to not be a fool, to make the time and to do it now, because our days are numbered, to sit at the Lord's feet and to understand and to learn his will for your life. And you aren't going to know his will unless you've slowed down long enough to listen to his voice. God wants to partner with you to turn a barren field into an abundant harvest and a beautiful field. The creator of the universe wants to partner with you. But each and every second is precious, and we're the stewards of that time. We aren't going to get that time back. Be very careful then how you live, making the most of every opportunity. I'm going to give you a moment to just ponder a few questions that you'll see on the screen. And the first one is this: do I understand what the Lord's will is for my life? Do I understand what the Lord's will is for my life? And if not, when will I take the time to be still and seek God's will through his word? So I'm going to give you just a moment to look at that question and ponder it and seriously consider the answer in your life. You to ponder this weekend is this. In light of my past experience, my current circumstances, and my future hopes and dreams, what is the wise thing to do with my time? So would you just take about 60 seconds and answer that question? This verse before I hand it off to Sean. In 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 11, it says, since everything around us is going to melt away, what holy, godly lives you should be living. Just challenge you today to seriously consider, make time to talk about how you're using your time and ponder how you're using your time. Here's Sean.
Well, thank you, Vince. I appreciate hearing again your personal story and that challenge to be still. Psalm 46:10 is one of my favorite verses. And for me, this season of transition has been one of excitement. And I continue to live in expectancy of what God has for all of us. I'm super thankful for the extra time that I have had with my family, especially our times of prayer together and just sitting around the dinner table and talking about life. And as we continue to ask ourselves the question, what in the world is God doing? I wanted to just focus the next few minutes on something God has been teaching me, and I believe it's something we all need to be reminded of in this season of transition. Historian Arthur Schlesinger Jr. observes that our society is marked by inextinguishable discontent. Our quest is better, and we look for the next big thing. We want a better job with better pay and a better boss. We want better relationships and a better car and a better backhand in tennis or a longer drive in golf. And we have a desire to live endlessly, to live tirelessly for the next thing, the next weekend, the next vacation, the next purchase, the next experience, or maybe the next corporate worship gathering in the building. We are never satisfied, we're never content, and we're envious of those around us who have what we don't. At Calvary, it's our desire to connect people to Christ, to community, and to their calling. Let's look together at Philippians chapter 4 and verse 11 and see what we can learn about contentment and how that can shape us to pursue our calling. Verse 11 says, I'm not telling you this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be satisfied in any circumstance. So what is contentment, and how could Paul make such a bold statement? I mean, he wrote this letter from inside the walls of a prison cell in Rome. And that's important to hold on to, especially as we consider the season that we are currently in. The reason Paul could make that statement was because he knew that contentment lies not in what he has, instead of whose he is. When I come into a relationship in God through his son, Jesus, I understand whose I am and what I have. A lack of contentment causes us to look horizontally at what others have, so therefore we never become satisfied. Contentment invites me to look vertically at God. And when I look this way, regardless of my possessions or lack of, or status or lack of, I know that he is enough. And I love that. You see, our enemy is not the COVID virus. Our enemy is not possessions. Our enemy, though, can sadly be the excess of things. Simplicity says if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. And for the Christian, contentment knows that if we have Jesus, we have enough. So you may ask, how can I be content? Well, contentment comes from when we can honestly agree with and say what Paul wrote in the next two verses, verses 12 and 13. He says, I know what it means to lack, and I know what it means to experience overwhelming abundance. For I'm trained in the secret of overcoming all things, whether in fullness or in hunger. And I find that the strength of Christ's explosive power infuses me to conquer every difficulty. Paul says that he was trained in the secret of overcoming all things. So contentment is learned. So here we are in the middle of a season that has caused a lot of uncertainty, some confusion, and sadly also some division. So let me ask you this question. What is the one thing right now that is separating you from joy? How would you fill in this blank? I will be happy when we're back to normal, when the kids can go back to school, when you're healed, when sports schedules resume, when I can get back into the church building. How will you finish that statement? I want you to take just a moment and think about that. Now, with your answer firmly in mind, I want you to answer this question. If your dream never comes true, if your situation never changes, can you be happy? And if the answer is no, then you could be living in the claws of discontentment. So where does contentment live? Contentment lives in the heart. And it isn't pretending things are right when they're not, but instead it displays the peace that comes from knowing that God is bigger than any problems and that he works them all out for good. That's Romans 8. Contentment is also of the will. It's a matter of accepting from God's hand what he sends because we know that he is a good God and wants to give good gifts to his children. So we accept from God's hand that which he gives. All that's needed, he will supply. Even the pain and suffering that we think cannot be corrected, he can redeem. A couple of weeks ago, Pastor Dan talked about the posture of surrender. If we fail to surrender, we will forever be discontent. Our freedom will be suffocated. We'll be in bondage to our desires, and there's a good chance that we'll miss out on what God has for us right now. We don't want to miss this opportunity. Tim Vanderveen from Spring Lake, Michigan, was a great student at Hope College in Holland, Michigan. Tall, broad-shouldered, curly hair, a smile as broad as the dawn, and as handsome as they came. In the early 90s, after graduating from college, he took a job at Johnson Controls and worked his way up the ladder of success about as quickly as anybody could. On a raw-boned, wind-whipped November afternoon, Tim called his good friend and former professor. Professor Brown answered and said, "Hey, Tim, how are you doing?" Well, a weak, trembling voice said, I'm not doing so well." Professor Brown said, "Well, what's up, Tim?" Tim said, "I'm in the hospital in Grand Rapids, and I've got the flu or something. My folks are out of the country now." Well, Professor Brown said, "I'm going to be in Grand Rapids later today. Maybe I could stop in and see you. Would that be okay?" And Tim said, "I'd like that a lot." By the time Professor Brown visited Tim, the doctors had already been there. And it wasn't the flu. It was leukemia. And that began a three-year arduous battle that he would lose or win, maybe. Now come to room 5255 in Spectrum Hospital 3 years later. Professor Brown walked into Tim's room. His mother was sitting in the corner crying, and you can't blame her. Tim was lying on his side. They had positioned the pillows between his skinny little legs. His hair wasn't curly anymore, and there wasn't enough energy for him to even look at the professor. So the professor got down on one knee so he could look him eyeball to eyeball. He said, "Hi, Tim," and Tim said, "Hello, professor." And there was a long, awkward pause. Professor Brown had been a pastor for 20 years and still did not know what to say. Tim broke the silence. He said, "I've learned something." And the professor knew this much at least, that you don't trifle with the words of a person who is about to die. You just listen carefully. So the professor said, "Tell me, partner, what is it that you have learned?" Tim said, "I've learned that life is not like a VCR. The professor didn't get it any more than you're not getting it now." So the professor said, I don't get it, Tim. What do you mean?" Tim said, "It's not like a VCR. You can't fast forward through the bad parts." There was a long pause, and the professor is thinking to himself, where does he get this stuff? Then Tim interrupted the silence again to say, but I have learned that Jesus Christ is in every frame, and right now, that is just enough. You see, contentment teaches us the lesson that Jesus is enough. If you know Jesus, you have a God who hears you. You have the power of love behind you. You have the Holy Spirit living within you and all of heaven ahead of you. If you have Jesus, you have grace for every sin, direction for every turn, a candle for every dark corner, and an anchor for every storm. You have everything you need. If you don't have Jesus, you'll suffer the opposite of what we just talked about. I've been reading in Psalm 39 recently, and verses 5 through 7 say, "What a brief time you've given me to live. Compared to you, my lifetime is nothing at all, nothing more than a puff of air. I'm gone so swiftly. So too are the grandest of men. They are nothing but a fleeting shadow. We live our lives like those living in shadows. All our activities and energies are spent for things that pass away. We gather, we hoard, we cling to our things, and only to leave them all behind for who knows who. And now, God, I am left with one conclusion. My only hope is to hope in you alone." So what in the world is God doing? Maybe he's trying to get our attention and to get us to firmly acknowledge that our only hope is in him. How is contentment shaping your calling to share the love of Jesus to those around you? Don't miss out on what God has for you. Remember that Jesus is enough. As the team closes us out with a song, we want to give you an opportunity to respond, and we encourage you to just sit and reflect. Take the time now to thank God for the many blessings that we have, to journal some areas of your life that you need to surrender to God in this area of contentment. What stuff have you allowed to creep in to your life? What is it right now that you need to hand over? Don't lose hope. Jesus is for you. Let me pray over you. God, thank you for the few moments we have had together today. God, in this area of contentment, help it not to destroy us. Help us to focus completely on you. If there's things in our lives right now that we need to surrender to you, I just boldly ask that through the power of your Holy Spirit, that you would do that in our lives so that we don't waste this crisis that we're going through. We desire to be on point and on mission for you. Would you help us to do that even in these moments? For it's in your precious name.